This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
Man, old devil, this is gonna be Buck's last day amongst the living.
What exactly he do to you?
Call it a professional robbery.
I know who you are. That love, the outlaw hunts down those who trespass against him with no mercy. My guns go bang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. We have another set of reviews actually lined up for you this week, both of which are available on streaming platforms. We are going to be starting off with a sort of revisionist Western that dropped on Netflix close to a month ago, and that is called The Harder They Fall.
I've gone on record many times to say how much I love Westerns, so I was very, very excited about this film. Essentially, I didn't know very much going in. I knew it was a revising of the traditional Western. I know that it foregrounds African-American stories and African-American actors. What I didn't know until I was about a few minutes into the film is that it actually features real African-American cowboys and people who existed at that time. And so I ended up finding it, I think, just such a refreshing take on the Western mythology. I really enjoyed this, even though it's not without its flaws.
I don't know how I feel about this story, honestly. It has everything that I am supposed to love. Like the plot is fairly simple. Like one outlaw wants revenge or seeking revenge on another outlaw who's come out of prison or broken out of prison. And that's basically about it. So he's getting like his old gang back together. And then it's like you said, it's a Western. It's a postmodern take. It has like good music and it's got good performances. But at the end of the day, it felt like very close but no cigar for me. I don't know what hit or what didn't connect. I like the elements of the movie, but I don't like the movie as a whole so much, if that makes sense.
Ooh, interesting. So I'm falling between the both of you in the sense that I liked some parts of it very much. I like the overall effect quite a bit, but I don't think that it's a movie necessarily that I would remember or that I think is one of the great ones that have come out on Netflix or is a Netflix original in that sense. I do think, so before we get into what we liked and didn't like, the story is a classic Western, right? A young boy basically has his family taken away or brutally murdered by a bunch of outlaws. They then mutilate him and he grows up to seek vengeance against them. And he becomes Nat Love, leader, sort of a legendary outlaw in his own right. And the person that he's looking for, the man who harmed him and his family, is Rufus Buck, played by Idris Elba, who is also kind of breaking out of jail and trying to start a black township through means of blackmail and extortion. And in other words, a lot of themes that take place in Western films a lot, right? Outlaws, outlaw versus outlaw, of trying to create a space of one's own in the great wide west, of seeking revenge, all these things. Some of the themes I thought were carried through very well. My favorite thing about the film is twofold. I think it looks really good, and I think the cast is incredibly stylish and talented. And I think those are the things that really propel it through its runtime.
I completely agree. Actually, for me, those are the two main things that carried me through to the whole film. It's what's left me feeling better about a story than I think I normally would have, because the story here really isn't its strongest point. And at some parts, it almost feels like it's a half an hour story that's been stretched out over a whole film. But the cast, oh my God, everyone is so good in their roles. Idris Elba, Jonathan Majors, Zazie Beetz, Regina King, Lakeith Steinfeld. I'm just naming the ones that you see the most of, but it's such a stacked cast. And I think that coupled with the fact that the film plays with that Western soundstage concept, and it has all of these like huge vistas, the things that you're used to, but shot through this really modern, almost music video, pop culture kind of lens. And so it just looks so fresh. So I think I felt like it was taking us into a space that feels really familiar, but retooling all the elements so that you feel like it's exciting again. And for me, that excitement was enough to carry me through to the end.
Your point about the half an hour story being stretched to what, 2 hours and 40 minutes, I think this movie was, or is it 2 hours and 18 minutes, something
like
that.
2 and a half hours at least.
Yeah, yeah. For me, that was the biggest downside of this. I feel like it could have been done easily in an hour and a half, hour and 45. It would have been way more compact and the pacing would have been a lot punchier and snappier. By like the maybe 90 minute mark, I was getting very restless and I didn't know how to keep up with the story or whatever was happening. But I also love the characters. I feel like they were so hyper charismatic. Like all of them were playing to, you know, whatever they do best when you see them in like movies. It's such a stacked cast. And the story was kind of, it didn't do them justice. Like the story wasn't enough to carry all these hyper talented, hyper charismatic people who are just like basically either being themselves or doing their best in this film.
So this is kind of what happens. I want to take it all the way back to what you said, Sharmila, at the beginning when you mentioned that you didn't know much about the film, and neither did I. I came into it actually seeing the hype that existed in America. And this is, of course, a thoroughly American tale, right? It's in the Wild West, after all. And so the only things that I knew for sure about it were that it is revisionist and has almost an entire cast of perhaps even an entire cast of African-American or at least Black people. And also that it featured actual cowboys and outlaws, all of whom were also Black, of Black heritage. And so I feel as if starting from that point, you get the sense that a lot of research was done and they just looked around in history for these figures that they could then kind of shove into a story and then make it happen. Because they say very clearly at the front, and this is what they want you to know, this story isn't real, but the people are. And so I think that it's more interested, the movie is more interested in telling you that than in telling you any sort of story at all. And so I think what we come down to is, I agree. I think it could have been shorter, but either that or maybe we could have played around with the story even more so that we get something a bit more substantive to support the fact that you've gone trawling through history for these people.
It kind of feels like Tarantino light or Spike Lee light, doesn't it?
Yep.
It's that idea of taking these jigsaw pieces and trying to fit them in a different way. It doesn't always work. Worth saying that the director is James Samuel, who's probably better known as The Bullets. And so that sort of singer-songwriter, musician vibe is really strong in this film. I love the soundtrack. I love how they use modern reggae or dub or hip-hop music as the soundtrack to this. The anachronism of it really works. But again, something quite Tarantino-esque about the whole thing. So you can tell that this is a first-time filmmaker in some ways. It's like he's drawing on influences. He's gone on record to say he loves Westerns. So, you know, you can feel him drawing on these different things from other films that he loves. Some of them come together really well. Some of them don't. I do think that it's the cast that really holds or papers over those cracks and makes it a stronger film than it is.
This thing is such a love letter. Like you can see it like all over the place. It's such a love letter to so many different things. But while watching it, I was also thinking about, I was like, this is why Westerns died, basically. Because if you look at the
oh,
plot,
no.
You're like, it kind of explains it. You're like, okay, so this is why this genre went out of fashion. Because even the old stuff, right? Even the Clint Eastwood stuff, for any of the old Westerns, it's a very basic point A to point B story. Like an outlaw shows up or a sheriff shows up and then the gunslinger has to do something to either get them out of town or have like a shootout and everyone dies. That's basically it. The newer Westerns, the ones that have tried to reinvent the genre, always have something clever to it. So the heist is like very intricate or very detailed, or the pacing is different, or it has a strange spin to the old genre, which this didn't do. So I think in a love letter kind of way, it stuck to the old way of telling the story, which is also to its detriment, for me at least. It was using a thing that died a long time ago, I felt.
So to me, It feels like it's caught between two stools, because the fact that it's revisionist and that it's reimagining the Western as a Black space, right? I think that was supposed to be the spin or the intrigue or, you know, basically the thing that updates this genre. But because it doesn't do much with that, and I don't think it really even wants to, I think the idea is that, look, seeing these people on screen in this capacity is itself kind of revolutionary. So I think because it doesn't want to necessarily subvert or play around with that too much, then we say that it's not fresh enough. But at the same time, if it had gone fully into diving into race and, you know, looking at all these things, then you would also have people saying, look, I came for a Western. And so I think that that's the tough thing, because I totally get where you're coming from. But I do think that if we were making this film, these would also be the considerations that we'd end up like just yelling at each other over and not reaching anything on.
Yeah, because, you know, the first half an hour or so, I kind of thought what this movie was doing was an alternate history where Black people were the cowboys of the frontier. And this was a world that was built around them and their cultures and communities. And then I realized, no, hang on, they're not doing that. White people exist. And these people were facing oppression and racism and so on. And then the film kind of doesn't do much with that. It very much exists just in a space. There's this great scene that I love where some of the members of the Nat Love gang rob a bank. And that scene is so clever because it's a bank completely staffed and owned by white people in a white town.
In a literally white town.
Yes, the town itself is white. And that scene to me felt really clever and transgressive in a way that I feel like the rest of the movie strives to be, but doesn't quite get there. But I do agree with you, Lynn, that I don't know where the sweet spot it is either, because I'm not sure I wanted a Western that was all about slavery and Black pain, because that kind of feels like it might be overkill as well.
I didn't want that either, but I wanted more of those scenes, the ones in the bank. Like that, I think that was one of the best parts of the movie. Like the comedy was good, the pacing was good, and the heist, the quote-unquote heist, was also good. I wanted more of that, and I was also not clear on the final message at the end, or if there was even a message. I don't know what it was. So was this movie supposed to be fun, or was this movie supposed to be about something? I don't know. Like, I'm not clear.
We're talking today about The Harder They Fall, which is available to watch on Netflix. Basically, it came out about a month ago, and we'd like to know, have you seen it? Do you like Westerns as a whole? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Get that horse and his wagon. Get that man and his rifle. Get that priest and his Bible. For them that's dead on arrival. Them that pray see heaven. Them that don't see devil. Separate but equal. Say them that slave my people. So break them chains and shackles.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And together we are reviewing The Harder They Fall, directed by James Samuel. Just came out about a month ago, and with a truly, truly stacked cast that I thought we could spend a bit of time on, because we've mentioned their names. But the thing is, the cast is the jewel in this movie, really. They're the ones who make it work. And I just wanted to say how much I'm enjoying Jonathan Majors. You know, he's someone who's been picking interesting role after interesting role and being charismatic as heck in every single one, even if you don't always love the final product. I think we all had mixed feelings about Lovecraft as well. But man, I enjoy watching him on screen.
He's so likable in this film, and it's important that you kind of hook onto his character, right? I mean, he's the hero, and you kind of really follow him through. And if you're looking to reimagine the classic Western cowboy trope, I think you couldn't have done better than get someone like Jonathan Majors to do it. And then, of course, in contrast to that, you have Idris Elba, and every scene he was in, he just like owns it, right? I think he underplays it just enough, because you don't actually see that much of him. Often he's just, you know, reflected on surfaces or standing at windows, or you see him in the shadows, and it's such a great presence. Really made me wish that he did get the Bond thing.
He's in conversation to be the villain, which kind of makes sense. Yeah,
that
apparently
would be very cool. And after this film, I can totally see it happening. Right? Yep. And I just wanted to shout out also the two female characters, Regina King and Zazie Beetz. I don't know if there's been a scene with standoffs between two women that worked this well, but I really loved what they brought to the screen.
Regina King was so good. Like, she was doing what she does best. She's so, so good. Idris Elba, I think I would only want to see him as villains after this, because as either like an anti-hero or a villain, he's like he has such a menacing, frightening stature, and the way he carries himself and that voice. Yeah, so I would want to see him as a villain after this just because of that. And Jonathan Majors, I think, between Lovecraft and Last Black Man in San Francisco, and another thing we watched this year, I cannot mention, I think he is like quickly, or is like one of my top five most anticipated or favorite actors in Hollywood. Like I would easily watch anything that he's in.
Lakeith Stanfield is also one of those... one of those screen presences that I would watch in anything. The term laconic is often used to describe Westerns or characters in Westerns. And I don't think anybody in this film is as laconic as Lakeith Stanfield. He manages to do exactly the right thing. You know, when he's kind of lounging in doorways, when he's being the fastest draw in the West and trying not to show off about it, but everybody keeps pushing him. You know, there's a lot of... I love that he captured, if we're talking about it being a love letter to the Western, that he captured that exact spirit. But I think, just to go back to the not so great, that perhaps that's where we come back to what we were saying earlier, which is that he does it well, he does it really stylishly, but there's no interrogation about whether his character is good or bad. And I think that that's that thing about the final message of the film, right? You leave it going... okay, I know who I was supposed to side because you started me off on this trail of vengeance, but ultimately it's not interested in interrogating anything more. It just seems to be a classic Western black-white zero-sum game kind of approach to the story while trying to insert shades of grey that the film then ignores whenever it wants to.
Lucky Sandfeld is actually... my both simultaneously my favorite character and also the character that frustrated me the most, because I felt like he could be a movie on his own. You know, there are scenes where you have so many questions about him. Why are his eyes looking like he's going to cry? Why is he upset? Where did he come from? Is he really loyal to his gang? Does he have other plans? None of these things are answered. And I feel like the actor brings so much to this role of Cherokee Bill that I wanted to know so much more, and the film doesn't deliver. And I'm not sure whether it was that the actor was overplaying and therefore left us with more emotions about the character than we should have had, or the script just didn't know what to do with him. I kind of would like to see other films sort of spun off from this. The movie almost ends on a note that indicates that it's a possibility. And if they do, I would so be on for a biopic of Cherokee Bill played by Lakeith Stanfield.
Do you guys think that that's a Netflix issue? Like, because I watching this movie, right, it has that typical Netflix gloss, and it also has the Netflix format of storytelling in the sense that the first half is amazing. Not amazing, it was great. Like great enough to keep you hooked and keep you wanting to know what happens next. And then after a while, it sort of just meanders or fizzles out, or it just keeps dragging on and on for way too long. And it's not exclusive to The Harder They Fall. It happens in a lot of Netflix big budget films, I feel at least. After a certain point, you just don't know where the movie is going, or you're not interested to follow the movie through. And I can't tell if that's like a studio thing, a writing thing, or how do all these movies so happen to fall on the Netflix catalog, you know?
I don't even think it's a movie exclusive problem. I was thinking while you were speaking about, if you divide it into thirds, right, and you think about their series, episode 6 is usually when it falls off the cart. Like episode 6 is when you go, I don't know anymore whether I'm interested in seeing this through all the way to episodes 10 or 12 by the end of the season. And when it comes to the movies, I mean, I think that this is just because it's a little bit movies based on algorithms. It's also because they don't necessarily want to land in such a way that won't allow them to continue exploiting the IP if they wanted to continue its sequels and the like. But the other thing is also, would we have felt differently if we watched this in a cinema? Is it us or is it them?
That's actually a really good question. As I was watching this movie, I kind of wished I was watching it in a cinema just because it looks great. And, you know, the doof doof of the bass and, you know, watching them walk onto the screen. Westerns are by nature meant to be watched on a large screen. You're supposed to feel like you're looking at those arid landscapes, or you can hear the horse hoofbeats as they thunder over the landscape or whatever. And so I felt a little bit let down that I was watching this at home on TV. So I think if I had watched this in the cinema, I might have liked it more than I did Watching it at home, I wouldn't have minded perhaps that the story wasn't so great. I felt that way about the remake of The Magnificent Seven, which is really not that good a film, but I enjoyed it tremendously in the cinema.
So that's interesting, because I felt like this movie was kind of platformless. It was kind of uncomfortable for me watching it at home because it felt like a big screen movie, like I was supposed to watch this in the cinema. But then at the same time, like I said before, it has that Netflix gloss. So it looks kind of like a TV movie. It's like overly aesthetic, or the colors pop way too much. And even the sets are nice, but they look small, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's also not something that I would pay to go watch in the cinema. So at the end of the day, it kind of fell in between somewhere, and I didn't know, is this like a big screen movie? Some scenes look like it's from a TV show. Some scenes look like the cinematography is amazing. Again, I think it just boils back down to that streaming confusion. Like, should this be on a streaming service or not? You know,
I think if I watched it in a dark room without access to my phone, I would feel differently about it. I would feel more enthusiastic about it, if only because we didn't talk about it. We don't have time now. The music is so great. And there are so many things about the movie that want to sweep you off your feet. And I feel almost like I didn't get the chance to have that experience because I'm watching it at home. And that's just a function of the times that we live in. But to conclude, sequel? Spin-offs? Yes, no? I mean, I think they're coming, but... like...
Yes from me. Maybe just with a Titan storyline, but I'm still interested in this film.
Same, but I want to see a TV show. I want to see like
episode. Yes for a TV show too. Yeah.
I don't want to sit through another 2.5 hours of a sequel to this film specifically.
Give us 2.5 hours chopped up into smaller episodes and we're all for it. We've been talking today about The Harder They Fall. We want to know, have you seen it? It came out about a month ago now. So if you have, let us know. Did you like it? Did you not? WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.